One of the things I've been as I've been reading about the DevOps and the Agile isn't that a legitimate concern that people have, this resistance? Do you think there's maybe a little bit of foot dragging that goes on with the automation because people are concerned that they're going to lose their jobs? You know, that's a very real fear that people have, you know, with the economy and lots of people looking for work. And have you seen anything like that in your experience?
Most of what I've seen is, yes, there is, it's a culture shift, no matter what you call it. You know, Agile was a culture shift when that first came into the development world. And DevOps, of course, is a culture shift when it comes, you know, into the operations and development world now. As far as, I think a lot of times people, the fear is, of course, of the unknown. You know, most people in IT, you know, they are the, you know, they're the Oracle expert, or they're the puppet master, or they are the Java guru. And when you start saying, hey, you know, we want you to start working on these DevOps teams, and we want you to, you know, get involved a little with the networking and get involved with the database. You know, sometimes they see that as, wow, that's going to water my skills down. You know, that's one of the first things I usually hear. Or they do view it as, oh my goodness, you know, I'm the guru here, and now we want this to be a team, you know, project, and is this going to, you know, eliminate or reduce the need for my position, et cetera. And for both those questions, I think it's a false assumption that people make, primarily because in the IT industry in general right now, you know, even though we do have a rough economy and, you know, there are signs of things getting better, but it's going to take a while, as it has. But where I am out here in the Midwest, for every person in IT out here, there's probably 3 jobs waiting for them. And we have almost near zero unemployment in the IT field, because every company, every business, you know, they know that IT and a technology is critical to the success of their business. So it's a little misleading, I think, sometimes when you look at some of the economic data and try to apply it to technology fields, because I really do think there's a big difference there. And I think as more and more people realize this, as they see more companies and coworkers adopting like a DevOps thing, and they realize that, hey, yeah, you know, this fear I had of perhaps losing, you know, being put out of a job because of automation or a new philosophy of how doing work, you know, that's really not true, because it enhances their skills, first of all. So you have this Java guru who now becomes pretty knowledgeable in how perhaps Oracle works. And so now that Java guru, in the eyes of the company and of many other organizations out there, is even more valuable, because not only does he know Java, but he's also, you know, he can make his way around an Oracle database. Now, by no reason is he an Oracle expert, but as we all know nowadays, the time is long gone where anyone in IT is doing a single job. You really have to be multi-talented in IT nowadays. You really have to understand not only how your stuff works, but how the other systems work, at least have what I call talking knowledge of that. You know, I may not know exactly how Oracle works, and I never want to know that, but I can hold a conversation with you to understand your requirements and understand how I need to interact with your system, and I can understand what you're telling me. And you know, that is very important. And so the whole DevOps thing, it's really bringing all these people together. So before, we worked in silos. We had our development silo, we had our operations silo, we had our Oracle silo, our network silo. And so it's saying, hey, you know, let's bring all you guys together. Now, we still need our network experts. We still need the Oracle experts and the Java experts. But we're going to bring it together so you all can discuss this and work on it together. It does not mean that the Java guy is going to do the same job as the lady who does Oracle. What it does mean, though, is when questions come up or roundtable discussions or you have to make a decision, you're all together and you're making the decision with the knowledge of everyone that's going to be impacted. You're not making these decisions in silos anymore. I really think this whole DevOps movement is great, because I think it's bringing amazing efficiencies to the whole process. Because, you know, I've worked on projects in my career where, yeah, you go through an entire development cycle. Then at the very end, you know, the network guys are going, well, that's not going to work. And and you have to go back almost to square one. But getting everyone together, you know, we're eliminating that. And I think that's, you know, stuff like that is just, it just makes common sense. And I really think if you go into many companies nowadays and go down to where their IT folks are, you're going to see something rather interesting going on, I think. In many organizations, gone are the cubicle walls. You're seeing more and more of these open floor plans, which does nothing but help DevOps, of course, as well, because we're taking down the walls and the barriers. We want people talking. And I think the more people talk, better things come out in the end, because, you know, who wants to sit in meetings all day long where you take notes and you find out that you missed something, so you have to have another meeting next week and a meeting to follow up that meeting? Well, why not just turn your chair around and talk to the person right behind you and have that conversation and let others hear it and let them join in and give their opinion? So that, I think that's really the fascinating thing about DevOps for me. And I think that the whole DevOps movement, which of course is, I see it as an offshoot of the whole Agile movement, is really going to help the whole automation arena. Because before, automation was really an afterthought. So the developers would work on the code, they get the code base up and running, your database people working on the database, they get their part up, the network people get their part up, the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the very end, oh yeah, well, we gotta bring this system up and down automatically, or we need this data transfer to happen. Let's see. How can we do that? And usually a few things happened. One, they'd either write it themselves. So now you end up with 500 different homegrown scheduling systems running in the environment. The second thing they often did was they just ignored it. They said, well, you know, this is the way it is. Somebody has to go push the big green button every day to make this happen, you know, which, of course, is inefficiency. Or thirdly, you know, they go to throw it over the wall, and they'd find out that there was nobody on the other side of the wall to catch it. So you had a lot of projects that just sort of fell into abandonment as soon as they went live, because no one really wanted to claim ownership of the thing. So, you know, I think a lot of this is helping drive it. So the folks that are doing the automation, the whole workload automation, the data center automation, they're involved from the get-go. So as they go through there, they're saying, hey, you know, we can jump in at this point and let's see what we can do to help, you know, make this a more efficient process, more effective process. Or, oh, yeah, you're going to be moving files from a secure location that has to be encrypted or unencrypted, but we can send them through our file management system that's being run by our workload automation tool. And not only, and, you know, it'll centralize this and give us one universal place to go look for this data. In a nutshell, yeah, I think DevOps is great for automation, and I think the two go hand in hand, and you know, I hope as time goes on we see more companies sort of embracing this whole DevOps philosophy, because I think it can do nothing but bring good things. I went to a conference last December, Computer Measurement Group, and there was somebody from PayPal there, and we were having lunch, and we got to talking, and I said, well, yeah, so, hey, you know, I'm using your new debit card that works with my PayPal account. So we have to talk about that. And she says, oh, well, she was asking what I did here at Carfax. And I said, oh, you know, I do a lot of the workload automation involved with Control-M. She says, oh, Control-M. I was like, oh, did you know that Control-M is what runs our reconciliation process in the back end for our debit cards? And I was like, oh, I would never have guessed that. You know, and so it's like, this is a great example of the whole workload automation thing. Because, you know, that's not typically a batch process, but it's an event-driven process. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, you know, that's the thing I always try to get to them. It's like you have to break that mindset of time-based and go look more event and resource-based. Mm-hmm. So many people have a hard time still to stay getting past that. They think of this as, oh, it's just batch. But I think, no, it's not batch. And I think PayPal, that's a great example, because, you know, they don't know how many transactions they're going to do per day on their debit cards. But, you know, as those events happen, you know, here you got this workload man, because you can't process all of them at once. So if I go have a million swipes of that card, you know, it would probably bring their systems to knees trying to process and reconcile, you know, all within a 5-minute time frame. Mm-hmm. But by, you know, doing effective resource and workload management, they can say, okay, you know, I can process this, you know, this window, this and the next window. Oh, now I got a more, you know, something else is happening here, so let's slow down. And it's true. at night, as because usually in the evening is when they do this reconciliation process, and I can tell by the how the emails come in, because I get an email for each reconciliation I use my debit card, and you know, some I'll get like three in a maybe a minute window, and then maybe a half hour later I'll get another two, and then finally maybe another half hour after that I'll get the final one. And it's like, you can. So even though I'm not, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, just knowing what the whole, you know, knowing that they do use this tool now and knowing the process, you know, or again, theoretical overview of the process, you know, you can start saying, oh, I see what they're trying to do here. They're processing all these transactions, and they're doing them in small chunks. Again, they're sort of doing, you know, they're not trying to process everyone at the same time, but taking them in small chunks as the resources become available on their end and processing them through. And, of course, the customer, me, gets the information on the other side, and you know, it's pretty fascinating. I'm probably looking too deep into that process, but it's, you know, to me, it's fascinating. Like, oh, that's interesting. It's the workload automation in action. If you're not careful, what can happen is, of course, it's great that you're automating, but if you're not careful, all of a sudden you have 200 different homegrown systems running across the whole company, and as the company grows, you find out that this is, you know, unsustainable because nobody really knows what everyone else is doing. And so that's usually at the point where companies, you know, once you get that early momentum going and you see a few successes and people go, you know, this is working, but how can we do this? You know, how can we make sure as we continue to grow we can do this better? And that's when they start going looking at the big vendors out there and, you know, trying to figure out, hey, what can we put this, you know, can we put this under a package that will do this all far as to what's commonly centralized, managed, you know, everybody knows what's going on, et cetera, et cetera. Oh gosh, over 14 years ago now, I was working for a large insurance company and here in the Midwest, and I had some data about agents. I was sitting there every night and I was like, oh, there's got to be a better way. And I wrote a little script. I was on the mainframe back then. I wrote a little rec script and it worked. And finally somebody said, hey, since you enjoy doing all that, it just so happens we have a opening in our scheduling. These call it scheduling department. You know, how would you like to do that? And I used to be an assembler programmer, so I was real deep down in the weeds there. And I said, you know what, this sounds like a good, fun challenge. I'll try it for a while. So I tried it, and I enjoyed it. And, you know, I enjoyed it so much, I started spreading the word, as it was, to others. And nowadays, you know, I say every day is fun, because not only do you, you know, you get to interact. I think most people who work in any type of workload automation role, or even going into DevOps role nowadays, you know, of course, DevOps is not really a role, so I should take that back. You know, working on the DevOps philosophy, you know, you get to interact with more than just the IT folks. Because when you talk about workload automation, you got to interact with the business, because the business has priorities. You know, amazingly, you know, the priority of eBay is not to see how many servers they can bring online or how much lines of Java they can write. I'm pretty sure the priority of eBay is to see how many sales and listings they can get on a day-to-day basis. And, of course, IT supports that. But, you know, that's not the – IT is not eBay's primary role, nor is it any. I mean, you'll be hard-pressed to go to any organization that say, yeah, IT is our primary role. Now, maybe if you're a consulting firm or something, IT may be a primary role, but – even then, so these tools and technologies, you know, they're enabling the business to work smarter, better. Again, one of the great examples I always give of this, and this really drives it home, is if you're my age, you remember back in the 1980s, Kmart was the number one retailer in America. There were Kmart stores on every street corner. Nowadays, most people, they don't even know what Kmart is, or you ask them, say, I haven't been to a Kmart in 10 years. And Walmart is the new king of the block. And then there's Walmarts on every street corner and mountaintop. There was a fascinating book I read a few years ago. I can't remember the title. It's something like Blue Light Blues. Of course, Kmart was always famous for their blue light special. And one of the chapters in the book, they said one of the reasons Walmart was able to pull ahead of Kmart, and at the time, Walmart was some tiny little Arkansas retailer that wasn't much of nothing. You know, here was a Kmart behemoth with 3,000 some stores. They said, what Walmart did that Kmart didn't back in the 1980s was Walmart invested in technology and in automation. So they got their warehouses automated. They got their stock replenishment systems, you know, automated. They knew what their customers were buying, and they could make sure they tailored to each store. Kmart is like, eh, we don't need that. You know, we're the king of the hill. And of course, history now shows us what happened. And I think that's a great example there, because no matter what you do, you know, if you're selling wool sweaters, there's probably 10 different firms that all sell wool sweaters. So how can you differentiate? Well, you can differentiate through your, you know, pricing. You can differentiate through your, maybe your corporate philosophy. But behind the scenes, you know, at the end of the day, it really is how good is your IT? And that's what drives a lot of companies, because you have to be able to react and react quickly to changes and do things better and more effectively, more efficiently. And because at the end of the day, we're all selling wool sweaters. And, you know, if there's a company that can do it better because they can restock those sweaters faster, they can keep the cost down because they know their trucks are going, you know, up to New York, and so they know they're going to pass by three other stores they can stop off along the way and save them three truck trips. You know, that's what matters. And, again, I think that's what's driving a lot of this whole data center automation, which encompasses workload automation, because companies are realizing that, you know, I can find, you know, I can make my company better if I can get my IT processing and processes more effective and more efficient. And I'll guarantee you, 20 years from now, we'll look back and there'll be somebody that overtakes Walmart, just like others. You know, there's always that. I think that's what drives, like, you know, now how can I do something better, you know, better and better and better. You know, of course that goes back to the whole agile thing. You know, I'm doing things in small incremental steps, but each step I'm getting better along the way. It's gonna be interesting, I think. I think this is a great, you know. I find it fascinating, you know, and I think the young people that are going to college now, when by the time they graduate and get out here and, you know, get into their careers, and especially in technology, you know, the world's going to have changed another 5 times.
What piece of advice would you give to IT shops working toward cloud-based process automation?
I guess the best advice I can give them is, you know, before you try to jump to the cloud, make sure you have your house in order in terms of your internal IT resources and your internal IT staff. Jumping to the cloud with faulty or non-complete internal processing or a way of doing things, all you're doing in that case is making the problem even bigger. So my best advice is, you know, make sure you don't try to run to the cloud until you're ready and until you have a good reason to be there. If you can handle all your IT stuff internally, there may not be any reason for you to go to the cloud. I think we get caught up on this cloud buzzword nowadays. Everything has to be in the cloud. Cloud this, cloud that, cloud, cloud, cloud. And yeah, it's a great, it has its benefits. It works well for many things, but sometimes you don't need it. Just like, you know, some organizations, they don't need Oracle. MySQL works just well for them. Same as the cloud. You know, you have to need it. You have to have a business reason for going there. And you have to have a justifiable reason for going there, too, because sometimes, you know what, it is cheaper just to go buy another server and bring it online internally than it is to go out there and try to get it in the cloud. And, there, of course, there could be security and other reasons why you have to make sure you understand before you go jumping out there as well. So my advice is make sure you know why you're going there, make sure you have a plan to get there, and make sure that internally you have things in order first. So you're not just moving the problem from one location to another.